Well, Dr. Janet, looks like it's hoodie day for both of us.
I know. I always, just because we do it over Zoom, I always just sort of try to make myself look presentable. But apparently, that's not happening at this point because, we're all in shutdown again. And I'm like, screw
Did
it
you get the
all.
emergency
I
broadcast
did.
on your phone?
I know. And I was like, dude, I already know we're shut down, but God, you made it sound like a tsunami alert is coming.
I know. I
Well,
know. I man, it's like, whoa. But
I'd have to say, coincidentally, a pretty close friend of mine just got diagnosed test positive today, and another one did on Friday. So it's, and the one on Friday, she felt horrible last week, like really bad and sick.
is she okay
So
now, I hope? I hope they're
yeah,
both
she's
okay.
seems to have turned a corner. Yeah, the other one hasn't had symptoms yet, so we'll see. So anyway, it's nutty times. So yeah. Wait, so I have something funny to say. My sister, I think she wrote this on Facebook in response to something. So she was listening to our last podcast, and then she was at the end of it and somehow by accident hit a button that made us talk at half speed. And but she didn't realize
And
it.
she liked it
No, she thought we were
better.
drunk. And
Oh
so
my God.
she said she thought, oh, wait, they must have been drinking this whole episode and now they're drunk by the end of it. Yeah. So
Oh
anyway,
my
I don't know.
God.
I was gonna tell folks if episodes ever get a little boring, feel free to fast forward, put us on fast talking or slow talking, and that will definitely entertain you.
Oh my God. Well,
Because everybody knows we did shots on our 100th episode and that we were drinking that episode of the peanut butter whiskey,
yeah, oh
the
yeah.
screwball whiskey. So I think everybody has it in their head. You don't know if we're drinking or not.
Okay, now hold on. Speaking of that, do you
Yeah.
remember that we talked about the peanut butter whiskey because we were doing shots? But remember I told you about the best rum I've ever had, the cream or the banana cream rum from
Oh,
Jamaica, but you couldn't get it shipped in? You can't.
Oh,
Well,
really?
Christy, a friend of mine who is a listener to our podcast, a big listener apparently, and thank you, Christy, she works at Vons. So she ended up buying me a bottle of cream rum or a banana cream rum that they sell at Vons apparently, that I don't know if it's new or I just didn't know about it, but I've never found cream rum except for this one from Jamaica. So I am very excited to try this. And I'm going to try it over Christmas
Oh, I
because I don't
really
have it
love
yet. It's
that.
with my buddy James. She
Okay.
dropped it off with him. And so now I'm going to pick it up. He called me, "Hey, dude, I got some banana cream rum for you." And I'm just like, oh my God, how nice of her. She texted me and said, yeah, right?
That. That's
Yeah.
very
So,
sweet. That's awesome. You're
yeah.
awesome, Christy. That's very cool.
Yeah, I really am excited about it. I'm thinking, what a great thing, because I hope it's as good as the other, because then I don't have to worry about shipping it in illegally from Jamaica, because I'll sure
Well, here's the
try.
thing. It's probably not as smooth and highly refined as the one there, but you might not notice the difference, frankly. Depends on how good how good are you at picking up the difference between like shitty wines and good wines?
I'm good at it.
Are you?
Yes, I'm a wine drinker, but here's the thing, I'm no sommelier, okay, so here's the thing actually. It doesn't matter if it's a $10 bottle, a $5 bottle, or a $400 bottle. I've had a bunch of different ones. It really just depends on the wine itself. There are $15 bottles of wine that I love, and there are $100 bottles of wine that I go, eh. Now, I don't get to have them a lot. I'm not a rich guy, but my father-in-law, again, I've told you this, does well enough that I get to try some wines I never would have tried before. Unfortunately, a lot of the ones I do like are ones that are out of my league, but it's okay. I'm finding some 10, 15, and 20, $30 wines. Justin's my favorite. You ever want a top-notch bottle of wine, and their least expensive one is like $22 in Costco, $29 or so with no discounts in BevMo, and it's the Justin wine. It's very good red wine. Oh my God, and they do white as well. Anyway, so
I
yeah.
never heard of it. So you feel like you would have that same awareness with rums then, like the nuances of differences?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I was just trying to brag a
Okay.
little bit, like I'm refined in
Oh.
some way, but I'm not.
No,
I'm still a
I'm actually
hillbilly from
impressed.
Santee.
Because I don't know this side of you. I'm impressed by this.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Jen, I'm so
It's
glad
a
you're
little
impressed.
arousing. It's good.
Right on. Hold on a second. Let me think for a second. Yes, I am turning you on. I like that.
Wait, what was the
I had to pause and think, am
pause
I? And yes, I am.
for? Okay, Especially in a year like this, where I feel like completely blocked from like nice things and like nice dinners or just really anything nice.
It's just like my wife, she's settled. You're starting to settle.
I know. I'm set. Like, right. Look how I'm dressed for this now. Like, I'm just 2020. It's just, you know, it hit its tipping point a long time ago for me, and it continues to do so.
Hey, Clint's got a heartbeat. He's looking all right.
I know. He talks to me every week and listens to me, sort of. He knows good things about wine. I was like, that's pretty high up in 2020 in terms of my connections with other men. So there you go. I know. It's
sad. Glad I could help you settle for just a moment.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you reminded me before we started talking here about a stay in the Whaley house and a sleepover at a cemetery. And
yeah,
things
I think
like
you
that.
Had some scary cabin story. And I do have a way of sort of combining this to sex, although it's sort of messed up. But go ahead.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to hear this. Should I tell the story first?
Yeah, tell your story first.
Well, okay, so this guy, Tim Regola, we talked a little bit about him last week. He's an adventurer. He's a guy who goes off in the wilderness by himself. And I mean completely alone, does not care. He will stay in the woods, in the mountains, by a river, by a lake. He's a mountain guy. And when he emailed into 91X back in the day on the morning show, I did Truth or Dare Thursday, just a little reminder from last week that I would do these dares. Well, one of them was cemetery sleepover. 1 year, we talked about doing the Whaley house. We talked about doing the Indian burial ground, things like that. But this one, the last one I did, was a cabin, a dilapidated cabin from back in the day. I believe it was the 1800s. If not certainly the very early 1900s, but okay. I do think it was from the gold mining days, I believe. And this is in Ramona, of all places. There's so much more footprint to Ramona than you realize that's wilderness. It's, oh my God, I had no idea. See, we parked on this gate, near this gate, this dirt road. It's as far as you could take a vehicle, and you had to leave a permit on your windshield to tell people, like rangers or whoever came around, that, hey, or authorities, whatever, we're in here, you know, we're only here for a night kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we walked, if I remember, a mile and a half or 2 miles, and nothing but trees and hills and things. Well, we come into this.
And were you doing this after dark, or was it daytime still?
We walked there in the daytime and then stayed through the night until 6 a.m. And trust me, I would have to say, I think this scared me as much or more than Whaley House. And I was out there with Tim, and it was a beat up, dilapidated porch with half a roof missing, some holes in the roof, wooden cabin, nothing but trees around, and the wind started howling, just like a movie, like just like when people get murdered in movies. And so we're sitting there, and Tim goes, hey, now that it's dark, do you want to go take the flashlights and look around the cabin? And it was a real small cabin. I don't think it was more than 800 to 900 square feet, maybe even 600 to 700 square feet.
Okay.
Really small.
Yeah.
It still had a couple of different little rooms. The kitchen was separate from the dining room. The dining room led into the living room. And then there was like a bedroom or two. And that was it. That was all it was. But you walk in and you got to avoid the holes in the porch through the wood. And then you see kind of a hole in the middle of the living room kind of thing. You walk around that. And then there's one in the kitchen. And there's a table and a counter. And you can tell it's all old. And it's all original retro stuff.
Wait, so the holes, though, weren't you freaked out about animals climbing in?
At the time I wasn't thinking about that, but now the lighter and better sense of me, since you brought that up, yes, should have been, but no, all I thought about
to me, that's much more realistic than like you're being haunted or there's a murderer there, just saying statistically.
I agree. But in my head, I was like, bad juju. So we go over, we walk through the living room. He goes, yeah, okay, so here's the living room. Here's this, here's that. And then he takes me into the dining room, which is absolutely connected to the living room. And he goes, so here's the table. He goes, now there's the kitchen. And that's when he tells me the story about, he goes, okay, so there was a town sheriff that got a phone call from this woman's sister. And this man was married, and his mother-in-law lived with them. And so it was the mother-in-law and the mother. And last week, if I said mother and daughter, that was completely wrong. It was mother and mother-in-law. And so he said that they, you know, knock on the door and the sheriff's waiting. And this is in the report, apparently, that he read about this, opens the door, and I'm making up the names, but John opens the door. He says, John, how are you? I'm good, Sheriff. Well, he says, where's your wife? Oh, she's here. Where's your mother-in-law? Oh, she's here with her. Yeah, we're all here. Well, can I talk to him? Sure. Come on in. Walks in the door. He walks the sheriff over to the table where they're both slumped over, killed with, I believe it was an axe.
Oh.
They were slumped over in their meals, all bloodied up, and the axe is like on the counter of the kitchen, and this guy's acting like nothing was. Then the sheriff notices the dude had blood all over him, and or at least spatters of blood.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and Tim's telling me this story. He goes, this is where this happened, according to the report. This is where this happened, and there's where he laid the axe, and here's where this. And then the sheriff looks at him and goes, you know, John, what happened to him? Oh, I killed him. You killed him? You murdered your wife and her mother. I did. John, you're going to have to come with me. Okay. Like the dude went bonkers nuts and just went in and got in the car and apparently went to, or whatever it was at that time, the wagon, I don't even know, and went to the jail. And he told me about the town that was down the hill, but it was too far and too dark for us to go. But he said there were still a couple of buildings and a couple, like you could just tell it was an old Western town. And
yeah,
and this is supposedly in Ramona. Now I never got to see the town, but the fact, so we went back out on the porch after he told me the story and showed me where this happened. And now all I got chills. I got goosebumps. The wind's picking up even worse. It's blowing through the trees. It's pitch dark. And I'm just like, oh, I ain't sleeping. And had to stay till 6 a.m. And I swear to you, that was probably the spook scariest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Like, so, that's...
I mean, and was there anything, like, particularly sounds that freaked you out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, okay. when a twig or something would break in the distance, I'm sure it was an animal. And he even said, oh, dude, it's probably just like a, you know, a fox or whatever it would be, a coyote or even a mountain lion. And I'm like, okay, all right, this is not good. And all I'm thinking is, if an animal doesn't kill us or scare the crap right out of me, literally, I'm going to have a heart attack from just being freaked out. So that's what it was like. And we made it to 6 a.m. We walked back down the hill. I went into work from there to the morning show. I think I got into the morning show by about 7:30.
And you were doing that specifically for the morning show?
Oh, yeah. It was Truth or Dare Thursday that I would do. And it was called Clint's Cemetery Sleepover, like I said. And that's and the only reason it stopped was because the morning show was disbanded, you know, business and all.
Yeah.
And I went to Rock 105.3 at the time. Chris stayed with 91X. They sold 91X from the company. And, you know, we were no longer on the show together. But I got to tell you, that's got to be, again, spook scary. One of the freakiest things I've ever done. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
And I, in fact, I see Tim on Facebook once in a while. And I think now that we're talking about this, I think because he moved away, I want to ask him, where is that cabin? I want to go see it again. Not at night.
Yeah.
Not by myself.
I want to go see it. See the remnants of the little town, too, like down
that's
the hill.
That's what I want to see.
That would be super interesting. Yeah. And then read up some more on the history yourself of the area. Like, that's totally cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, and I'm into ghost towns and things and abandoned buildings. And I'm not going to go by myself and check it out because I'm way too big a wuss for that. But it intrigues me.
That's awesome. Yeah, likewise.
So that was it. Well, but wait, you said you had something.
Yeah, well, this is really messed up because this is like disturbing, like in a like sexually disturbing way. So I was trying to think because last time I said, what does this have to do with sex? And then I was like, oh, wait, maybe I have an idea. So because I was trying to think. So in general, when we're afraid, it shuts our sex drives down.
Oh.
You know, like often we just, because that would be foolish to, you know, because you're scared because you feel like you're in danger. So if you think like physiologically as an animal, if you're in danger, you don't want to like suddenly be turned on and be like, I think this is a good time for sex.
Okay, so I totally believe you. I agree with you. And I know you know a bazillion things more about sex than I do. However, is that even true for, say, an 18, 19, 20-year-old male who gets a stiffy from the wind, Boston Rob stiffy? Is it even true for them? Because I remember not being able to control my boners when I was
right. No. So that's a totally different thing of hormonal stuff. I will also say there is something called misattribution of arousal. If you are, I think there's a difference of really feeling like your life is threatened versus feeling sort of anxious, excited anxiety. Like, because I think I've talked about this before. There's the classic study of, this was done on a suspension bridge up in Vancouver, Canada. It's a classic social psychology study where they had men that were crossing that bridge and there was an attractive woman on the other side and they were like more likely to want to like give their phone number to her type of thing. Like she was in on the research. So there is something like that where actually fear like that, if you have somebody, I think, who may seem attractive to you and may seem safe to you, you know, I'm not quite sure the details in terms of that, but you could then, your anxiety, your arousal is in that way of being, you know, the fearful excitement of walking across the suspension bridge could be similar to the fearful excitement of, you know, being attracted to somebody and putting yourself out there by asking their number. So there's, you know, there are some conflicting things about this. At the kind of messed up end, I was thinking about how this is screwed up. How some,
now I can't wait.
No, you'll see why. Sometimes, because people sometimes say, well, how could a man ever be raped by a woman? Which, right? Which does happen sometimes.
I was about to say, I can see how that could happen.
Well, he'd have to have an erection, right?
For it
to happen. And so people say, well, he couldn't have been raped then because he had an erection. He really wanted it.
He could have wanted sex, but not necessarily with her in that scenario.
Well, certainly all of that stuff for sure. Yes, right. He could have been turned on because they were doing other things, but didn't really want sex. And then she, you know, took advantage. So that's definitely a part to tie it to the fear thing, though. But often you think, like, if a man's actually in a dangerous situation where he feels like he doesn't have control and where he could be raped by a woman, or let's say he was tied down or something like that, his fear would probably make his erection go away. However, our bodies react to being touched sometimes. So like a penis could be touched and stroked and the guy could get an erection even against his own will, even if he doesn't want it.
It does have a mind of its own.
Yeah. And so there's aspects of women sometimes like getting raped and they're being touched and all, and their body could self-lubricate some. That seems to believe, I mean, some of the theories I read on that seems to be that's an evolutionary protective thing for women, because it's much like, if you're going to get raped, it's much better actually if you're also not going to like bleed and get all torn
right,
up.
Get torn, exactly.
And injured by it. Yeah. So
as sad as that is, I kind of thought that's what you were going to say with.
So our bodies can still respond to touch in that way, just sort of an automatic reaction, even if we don't want something. So, but anyway, and there's some complexity around scary situations or anxiety situations. There's a little Dr. Jen.
What a trip.
I dropped on you.
Well, thank you very much.
27 years since I started in this field means I just have like so much random little bits of knowledge lodged into my head.
What was the movie Ricochet with Denzel Washington and John Lithgow? I think that was it. Actually, maybe not. It might've been, well, whatever it was, it was a movie, and now I'm going to look it up because there was a scene in there where Denzel Washington is kind of raped, sort of like he's on drugs. Mm-hmm. And this woman, as part of John Lithgow's revenge on him, had him in a room tied up with where this woman got him excited and she had sex with him, gave him, I think it was chlamydia or gonorrhea or something while he was married. And, you know, he couldn't help it. He wasn't there by choice. He was drugged and all that. But it was funny because he says, no, no, please don't. And I remember him saying, I don't want to. And she's like, that's not what your little friend says. And so, right. And you made me think of this because, well, and then, you know, he's got to tell his wife and the whole thing. It was actually a decent movie. But it's just one of those things where I always thought about that. And now here you are telling me that that is an absolute possibility. So let me see. Ricochet, Denzel Washington. Yep. John Lithgow, Ice-T, Kevin Pollak. That's it.
Wow.
It was from 1991, an American action crime thriller. And he's Nick Stiles, the assistant district attorney of L.A. And he's in the early days as a cop in the LAPD during, I think it was a shootout or a robbery. He arrests John Lithgow. He goes to prison. He escapes, gets out years later. And his whole goal is to get him back. And that was a scene.
Wow.
And now that we're talking about it, I don't remember walking away going, oh my God, what a great movie. It was good.
Yeah.
But I will probably watch it again now just for that scene to remember more of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, this is definitely a really heavy topic, but one I don't think we've actually ever talked about on here. You know, because I talk a lot about sexual consent and sexual assault, and, you know, one of my specialty areas is female sexual empowerment. And as a woman who's experienced coercion, I speak from that place. But, and there's a lot of shame, you know, around that for women, but for men that are raped by other men or that are raped by women, there is so much shame and stigma around that and not being believed. Right. So we're talking about circumstances where other people would be like, well, clearly you wanted it. Don't tell me that. You know, you had an erection, which is so terrible because not only have you been violated and coerced But then you like feel guilty or like you asked for it or you did something mm-hmm. wrong, which is just such a horrible added weight of, you know, emotional shame and mental, you know, berating of yourself. So, and I'm heard story from men over the years of like when they were teenagers, the first time they had sex was an older woman that kind of seduced them and in situations where they weren't ready for it and they didn't want it, but they felt like, well, I'm supposed to want this. And so they felt coerced into it or getting a blowjob that they did not want in a situation they weren't comfortable in.
And it's really hard to, as a man to even imagine that, Dr. Jen. Like, honestly, well, and I don't mean, and I don't mean from another man. What I mean is, and again, this isn't, if you're, put it this way, if you're gay or you're straight, it's whichever your sexual preference is.
Yeah.
In other words, for me, it would be hard to imagine that from a woman and not somehow wanting it to some degree, but to your point earlier, if
I'm sure, have you ever been like in your past, were you ever in a sexual situation or in a situation with somebody that you're like, I think she really likes me. I really am not interested in her and
I
do anything. And can you imagine if she like then wanted to go down on you or something like that? Wouldn't you be like, no, let's not do this.
Yeah. So there was a scenario where I went home and I've never in my opinion, had a one night stand. And I say in my opinion, because the one time I had sex with one woman, one time that I used to work with was that I knew her very well.
Right.
And then we were still friends after and talked. I mean, maybe that is a one night stand, but for me, it wasn't like I met her and then took her home.
It wasn't like an anonymous, right.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't regret that at all, but there was another scenario where I was in my early 20s, and I was in the best shape of my life. And this woman who I was attracted to at a bar, we talked and our friends were all hitting it off and she was a friend of a friend. So it wasn't like I did just meet her, but it wasn't like I didn't know anything about her at all. And, you know, pretty good looking, the whole thing. But then when I got to her house and we were walking upstairs, I noticed pictures on the wall that, and I don't think she was married. She might have had kids, but she wasn't wearing a ring. But I got a red flag walking up, looking to my left. I remember this going like as she's leading me up the stairs, like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I didn't know. Maybe she was married. So,
right.
And part of it was also that I was, you know, pretty sober at that point. And I just wasn't as attracted to her as well, but I went, whoa, 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 red flag. And I didn't say, I just went, you know what? I should go. So before we ever hit the top of the stairs, I left. Now I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm some hero. Cause I, you know, noticed the pictures on the wall. That definitely was part of it.
Yeah.
But you know, if it were, I'd like to think I would have anyway. And I would think that I would have, but not 100% sure. Cause if this woman were 100% turning me on, even when I was sober and, oh my God, this, you know, most gorgeous woman ever. Maybe I wouldn't have noticed those pictures. I don't know. I'd like to think I did, but I turned around and she was definitely, oh, come on. And so I walked out, but I mean, similar scenario anyway.
Well, and had you been drunker, probably would have been a different situation.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. You might be right, but there's been scenarios too. There was one scenario where there's a woman that I was very attracted to. And I think part of my issue on this one was that I was intimidated because at that time I 19 years old, worked at the gym. She was a hairdresser, set up through friends. And I just thought, man, is she smoking hot? Well, we got a little drunk one night and she was totally for it. I couldn't get it up. And this was in my like late teens, early 20s. And I didn't have any problems like that back then. So I think it was lack of confidence and because it wasn't that I didn't want to. I was like, oh my God, what's wrong with me?
Right.
And she just goes, I think maybe you're too drunk, which I guarantee you that I remember that conversation. I was not.
There's your answer. Yeah, right? But no, I know. And that's the funny thing that sometimes for women to be like, oh, he must not be attracted to me. And to realize, no, he's so attracted to you or so into you. It makes him so nervous that he loses his erection. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. And so as a man, I look back at that and I think, you know, give me another crack at that one. Cause I tell you right now, I'll get my mind on better things rather than she's too hot for me. Dumbass. Yeah. Dumbass.
Well, I mean, this is another really interesting, important topic too, that we haven't touched on before. And I think this is particularly relevant for younger generations of men. They feel a lot of pressure on them that they should always be DTF. And they think that everyone else thinks they are, you know, what
is that down to fudge?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I know the lingo.
And then that puts like pressure on them that end up, and then they end up having sexual situations that they didn't want. They feel like it's expected of them. They're supposed to, regardless of whether, how much they like the person, how much they're interested in it, how much they want to do it, how comfortable they are. So like, that's not right. So it ends up for some young men in particular, can end up being its own kind of form of coercion that they're like, oh, this woman's pushing for this, really wants it. I don't really want it. But
it's also the question of, when will I ever get it again? No joke. I know that sounds like a joke, but it's not like, oh my God,
right.
When's this going to happen again?
Yeah. Scarcity perspective that, right. That sometimes men feel like, I need to take whatever I can get. And that's the danger of a mentality, because then it's like they're taking instead of it's a shared experience. And that then ends up showing up in a lot of coercive situations. And men don't even realize, but they do. They're sort of grasping and taking and pushing, even if it's subtle, because, right, they're coming from a scarcity perspective that I need to take everything I can get from this and go as far as I can because I don't know when it'll happen again. That's a terrible, I get it. But you, like, this is another human being in front of you that you are taking something from. That's not cool.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's recently getting divorced, and it's along these lines, and I'm not going to say any more than that. I'm going to, when we're done, and I know we have to wrap it up here in just a minute. I got to get on the air on KGB, and you got stuff to do, but if you're good with it, I'm going to call him sometime today and ask him, because we just talked about this literally 35, 40 minutes ago.
Oh.
A scenario about him with online dating along the lines of scarcity and all these things, and I just want his permission to tell the story, even without his name, before I do.
Yeah.
So if he's down with it, if you want to, we can address this next week, because it's very interesting to hear his take on
where
he's
at. Yeah. That would be fantastic. That sounds super interesting. So
okay.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay. So all right. Well, Dr. Jen, you are the best. Yay. Property of XXL Decadent Dog.
Oh!
KS Exercise Team.
No, Decadent Dog. This is a shout out to Rob, Boston Rob, because Dog. Yeah.
Yeah, Canine Exercise Team.
And I think he gave this to me before he moved from San Diego, like, I don't know, 4 years ago. This is one of my favorite sweatshirts because it's big, and I think it's my only hoodie, and it's got like the hand pocket in it. I sleep in this a lot.
I'll tell you what, the design is so good on that it gives me a stiffy, Boston Rob.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, Boston Rob. What is it again? Decadent Dog Canine Exercise Team on the East Coast in New York, is it?
Does it? Yeah, Canine Exercise
Boston,
Team.
Boston.
That's so funny. Boston. Yeah, Decadent Dog. That's his dog walking pet care company. So
Google them if you can, if you're in his area.